You're listening to BusinessAmericaRadio.com, the leader in live business talk radio.
Welcome to Managing Technology the Right Way with your host, Sun Jogal. All comments, views, and opinions expressed on this show are strictly those of the hosts, guests, and callers. Now showing you how to manage technology the right way, here's Sun Jogal.
Good morning, folks, and welcome to the show. It needs careful planning and flawless execution to make technology work for us. But how many times do we succeed? On this show, we invite business leaders and subject matter experts with extensive experience in technology management. The intent here is to learn from their experience and discuss better ways to manage technology. To learn more about the show, please visit talkshow.avval.com. That is talkshow.avval.com. Today's topic is managing distributed projects. Our guest for today's show is Roberto Evaristo. Roberto is on the faculty of the Information and Decision Sciences Department at the University of Illinois, Chicago. He is currently involved in several projects related to management of distributed projects with work done in Japan, USA, and Europe. He has published in outlets such as Communications of the ACM, International Journal of Project Management, Database, Journal of Global Information Management, Competitive Intelligence Review, European Management Journal, Human Systems Management, Journal of Organization Computing and Electronic Commerce, and International Information Systems. He also serves on the editorial board of the Journal of Global Information Management and the Journal of Global Information Technology Management. Good morning, Roberto. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thanks for inviting me.
Oh, pleasure was mine. How's the Chicago winter treating you?
Quite different for a Brazilian, I would say, but getting warmer.
That's great. Now, you have done a lot of work in with respect to distributed projects, and our listeners would be interested in learning about this term because this is relatively new. The way people look at distributed projects is something which has been done by geographically dispersed teams. Is that how the distributed projects is actually defined, or is there something more to it?
That's a very good question. When originally I became interested in this topic, I was really thinking about problems related to culture, and then I realized that so many of the different teams that were working indeed from geographically dispersed locations clearly had cultural problems, but there were also other issues that were even more important. In a way, they superseded, they incorporated culture as one of them, but there were many other issues. So for over 10-12 years, I have been working on that, doing not only research, talking to people, doing field studies, but also actively involved in consulting with companies in many different countries in that area.
So, so if I understand correctly, it is indeed the way you define distributed projects. It's just, you know, geographical distribution. There is nothing else which is a string attached to the way it is. It should be defined.
Well, I would say there is many sub dimensions to that. That's indeed the most important way, because the dispersed is really the critical part. However, I find that sometimes there are teams that are dispersed even in the same city. As long as they don't see each other, many times some of the same problems, a few of the problems that would happen over long distances, also happen in a more closed, in a more closed by environment as well. So things like, for instance, how complex a process or a project may be, the type of project you're involved, the level of formalization or structure, as well as how much people know each other, are all subparts of that general issue of how dispersed or how distributed a project truly is.
So when we talk about this distributed projects, especially, we know that we had been managing these IT projects with the remote teams in place, and major projects were being carried out that way. Now, this outsourcing and offshore outsourcing has become a norm now, but in some form or fashion, this was already there, since a couple of years ago. And when we talk about these offshore outsourcing-related issues, how much of that, or you can say success of these outsourcing issues that you have, outsourcing projects that you have, how much of that do you attribute to the formal methodologies and processes that people put a lot of time and effort and money into versus the actual trust factor between the two teams. Like how well do they understand each other? How well do they communicate with each other?
That's a very good question. We have somewhat of a cycle there because many companies, prior to getting to the formal established procedures, they need to have that trust in place. Larger companies are fortunate enough to have spent time and effort and resources in putting all that very strong methodology in place. And, of course, that is extremely important. I would say that clearly plays a very strong role. But if you have that and the team does not gel, does not have the trust to work with each other and to make the whole process synergistic and taking advantage of the individual advantages of each different location, it can still fail. So I would say that trust plays a very, very important role as well. So ideally, I would like to have both things. Sometimes that's not true, and that's part of the question. How, once you have those formal procedures in place, or along the process of creating procedures, the formalization of all the methodology and so on, how do you make sure that trust gets carried along sort of in the same way, or if it's broken, how it can get repaired?
But isn't trust a very human thing, and you cannot actually put your arms around it with a bunch of procedures and processes?
Well,
it's a very subjective area, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah, so people might say, yes, we trust you, I embrace you, but at the end of the day, if they do not deliver as promised, then, you know, both parties suffer. So,
I think that the traditional problem in being far away, especially if somebody is working in a attractive location, say warm, versus the other one that may be working in a cold place, it could be that if you don't, you cannot see the other person, you end up attributing some delay or some milestone that is missed to something else, perhaps to a different different set of priorities the person may have at the time, either personal or work-related, and then it's so very easy at that point for the other side to think, well, if the other side can drop the ball or at least delay it, why can't I do the same when there is a crisis in my daily situation here that I need to attend right away because my boss is talking to me directly here as opposed to over a phone line and 10,000 miles distance.
So are we talking about people looking for scapegoats? and that's what it's coming out to be. And you know, you are actually to quite an extent right, because when it comes down to, you know, there is a lot of criticality attached to a project, it's a mission-critical thing, then while people are putting their best, then nobody wants to take the blame, so especially when it becomes remote. So guess what? You can blame the very fact that it has been geographically dispersed, so, you know, those guys are 12 hours away, I do not know how to get in touch with them. So people have all sorts of excuses to say, you know, we could not deliver because of XYZ factor, versus trying to also look at, you know, what they could have done better, or collectively work with the other team to make sure that the whole project or the whole team works as one versus two different silos who are trying to save each other's, you know, like their own interests.
Absolutely. I think that's clearly one of the issues. And the moment that happens for the first time, it is a very slippery slope, because then there is a possibility of finger pointing back and forth. And very soon you get in a situation which has become pretty much untenable. And it's very hard to get back from that once there has been specific names, specific people mentioned in issues and associated, blamed for failures. Then it becomes a personal thing, and it's very hard to recover from that.
So do you recall any such instance where actually something like this was happening, but then, you know, their management or somebody in their team, one team versus the other, they were stepping up to the plate and saying, okay, we will take care of this, and then they found a solution so that they could bring the project back on track even though they were geographically dispersed?
I do, in fact. I was involved, and this is a personal example, in a case study where this was in Japan, and there was a joint venture of four large companies, two of them American and two of them Japanese. And they were trying to install fiber optic in certain places in certain towns, in some smaller to mid-sized towns in Japan, for on-demand delivery of content. So including movies and things like that. So one of the U.S. companies was a technology company. The other one was a content media company. And then they had a number of issues related to, for instance, having maps sent back and forth with how the installation of the hardware would occur in certain places, areas of these cities. And there was, I remember one particular instance when there were problems with maps because the location of repeaters and some other boxes were incorrect. And this generated, this work of the map drawing was done in the U.S. And then it was sent to the headquarters of the joint venture company in Japan, and then it was taken to the field, installed, and or checked to see if the map fit, and then was sent back to the U.S. for corrections. And then at that point, there would be an order shipped to many different suppliers all over the world, and that the whole material would come and then be installed. So the whole cycle took maybe 5 to 6 months from the first map drawing all the way to installation. And because it was so long, many times it happened that there were problems either on one end or on the other. But this particular one that I had in mind, the company suffered because there were some parts that were shipped from the U.S. and they had not been tested to the 100-volt power supply they have in Japan. And the Japanese felt very uncomfortable with the quality testing of the American company. And therefore, the process started going worse. And then there were some problems. The Japanese also didn't do certain things. And as a result, there was a general lack of trust between the two teams. And the way they had to go about fixing that was literally inviting all the key personnel in Japan to come to a central location in the U.S., in fact, and everybody was able to meet. And that face-to-face meeting was enough to at least put a name to the face, enough that the American engineers decided they were willing to learn a few Japanese characters so that the maps start being all in Japanese, and trust increased enough that they at least were able to start on an equal footing. There was no, they didn't come out of the situation totally great friends, but they at least got to know each other and understood that there were problems that had happened that sometimes were beyond their immediate control. That solved the problem, increased the structure of the process, and from that point, it worked almost seamlessly. So I think that's a great example of how trust was lost because of a series of small events, and they were able to, by using the idea of meeting and discussing the issue together with playing golf and other activities like that, they were able to regain that trust.
So one of the lessons learned seems like that, first of all, we should not totally rule out the value of face-to-face at least once or twice or a couple of times during the project, so that people, when they see each other again, we're dealing with human beings here versus any machine. So they definitely are able to step up to the plate and also are able to become more conscious about what the other party needs. So this is one of the things which I see. And the communication, the other aspect seems like the communication between the teams. After all, what all things went bad was not because of they had the wrong intentions. It was just it was not communicated properly. So these are the two things as it seems like, they are some of the critical factors which would make or break a project.
That's absolutely the case. That's absolutely the case. In some projects, though, they may have a lower budget. That may not be feasible. And that's one of our main concerns in our research and consulting is, if you cannot do that, how do you get around the issue? What is the next second best? Ideally, I would say yes, having enough time and resources, which is increasingly becoming less possible. As many people in the team, or at least the managers, can meet and have at least a liaison that they know and have a fairly good rapport, that's the ideal situation. Going from there, many other alternatives which stay at the virtual level, but they have, of course, shortcomings.
That's wonderful. And how do you think the culture, again, we're looking at the softer side of the human being, how does the culture, the background, the ethnic background, we would not go into the race side of it. At the same time, there is a way people think when it comes down to even their profession. Yes, their family lives might be different, but even from the job standpoint, people take the punctuality, the way they are bound to the commitment and things like that. That's totally different for different people. So what do you think was the impact of culture?
That's a very interesting question. Of course, culture is perhaps one of the most misunderstood concepts. I mean, sometimes people think of culture as purely a difference between countries. But even if we look at a country like the U.S., there is so varied, it is so large, there is so many differences. I have met many teams that working with groups from the other coast, or even from the south, being from the north or whatever, there is clear differences in the way people approach so many of the things you mentioned, career, life, and so on, as well as their attitude toward time, or and so on. Of course, when we go to different countries, they have even completely different backgrounds and history, then those differences get even magnified. And because of that, because culture is basically a situation that has been, the people have as a result of their experiences in the past, it turns out that affects their behaviors, their expectations of what certain things should be or should happen. And because those expectations are typically not expressed, then it's very easy to create misunderstandings because of that. Like, for instance, you mentioned the issue of time. In South America, it's very common that when people schedule a meeting, it's acceptable to show up, say, half an hour late, and perhaps even more. There is no such thing as a time for meetings or parties to end. And that's acceptable and is expected. If you are on time, you are the person that is different. And of course, that makes people that are in countries where punctuality is very important to feel very uncomfortable with the whole thing. Or even how people start a conversation, a business conversation, some places that could be, okay, here's the business at hand, let's deal with it. Whereas in other places, you're almost expected to ask for their life story. So, as you can tell, lots of interesting things there.
That's awesome. And in fact, I remember one of the comments made by a very good friend of mine. She's a clinical social therapist, and she mentioned that in, like, you know, very, very old days in America, the Native Americans and other people who were around, when they used to say, you know, we are going to be meeting you tomorrow, the tomorrow could become day after. And they would come and, you know, it would not be taken as something that they have missed out on or they have done anything wrong. They say, okay, now what's next? So there was no boundaries put on anything like that. And still they used to continue doing their business and were successful. So it's all a very relative term, but guess what? If we are living in Rome, we have to be like Romans. So if we are in U.S., then we have to live like that, and the other party should also appreciate it. Now, before we move on, let's take a quick break, listeners. We'll be right back after these messages.
Looking for ways to improve your IT department? Then visit www.abbal.com today. Avaal is a professional services firm with a mission to help companies align IT with their business objectives through strategy, technology, branding solutions, and services. Our commitment is to ensure bottom-line improvements as a result of services rendered by us, whether it's an IT needs assessment, strategy development, or related implementation. We back it up by our unconditional, positive ROI guarantee. To find out how Avaal can help your company, visit www.avaal.com or call 1-800-947-2832. Avaal, making IT work and look better. www.avval.com. Visit today.
If you're an independent business owner, you know about the many different challenges that you face, from employee relations and payroll to OSHA compliance. For cost-effective help with these problems and much more, tune in to Human Resources for the Entrepreneur with John Bierman every Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. On the show, John will discuss useful, practical human resource information, as well as bring you exciting and knowledgeable guests that will give you insight on many of the tough questions that you face as an entrepreneur. So make it a point to tune into Human Resources for the Entrepreneur with John Bierman every Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, right here on BusinessAmericaRadio.com. Talk radio with a business perspective.
Do you want practical business talk radio that thinks outside of the box? Then you need to tune in every Wednesday at 7 a.m. Pacific Time, 10 a.m. Eastern Time to Business Out of the Box with Margot Maddock-Murphy. Margot will tackle many different aspects of the business world, from building and reclaiming your profit to improving communication and breakthrough thinking, with great opportunity to call in with your questions or new business ideas. Your host, Margot Maddock-Murphy, is a veteran in business deployment and profit building with companies such as AT&T and Johnson & Johnson. Her business experience spans the globe, working with over 40 countries and in 11 industries. Margot, her guests, and callers are truly your airtime business solution finder. So don't miss your chance to keep the profit in your pocket and get out of the box every Wednesday at 7 a.m. Pacific Time. Once again, that's Business Out of the Box, right here on BusinessAmericaRadio.com. Talk radio with a business perspective.
Rule number one when investing, always have a strategy. Rule number two, listen to Strategies for Enlightened Investors with Jim Whitten and Lance Alston. Heard every Friday at 7 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, Strategies for Enlightened Investors will expose investment myths that just aren't true and let you know about financial planning strategies for your future. Become an enlightened investor every Friday at 7 a.m. Pacific Standard Time right here on BusinessAmericaRadio.com. Talk radio with a business perspective.
Keeping you a step ahead of the changing world of business. This is BusinessAmericaRadio.com.
We now return to Managing Technology the Right Way. If you have a question or comment, call toll-free at 1-866-233-7861. Now back to the show. Here's Sun Jogal.
Welcome back to the show, folks. For listeners who've just tuned in, today's topic is managing distributed projects. Our guest for today's show is Roberto Evaristo. Roberto is on the Faculty of Information and Decision Sciences Department at the University of Illinois, Chicago. He is currently involved in several projects related to the management of distributed projects with work done in Japan, USA, and Europe. Before the break, we were discussing about the impact of culture, the human side, the softer side of the project management. How does it impact the distributed projects? So, Roberto, please continue your thoughts.
Yeah, as I was describing, I think that so much of culture is related to your past experiences. And the one thing I had not had the opportunity to mention is, of course, because we have past experiences in different arenas of our life, some of it is at organizational level, some of it is at family level, perhaps religious or other traditions that we have around our everyday life. What happens is that generates, again, different expectations for different levels. So we had talked about the issue of timing, how punctual people may be, but some of those behaviors also affect other things. Like, for instance, in some countries, it's expected that when you say, I'm going to do this tomorrow, you really mean, I'm going to do this tomorrow. In other places, tomorrow or mañana or could mean sometime in the future, in an unspecified time in the future, that is just said as a way of avoiding the no, which is a very hard words for very hard word for certain cultures to say, and as a result, you get interesting situations where somebody says something and the other side naturally expects that that's what they mean, but that's a code word in the original culture to say, well, I don't really know how to do this. I'm not sure if I want to do it. And this possibly it will never happen. But and then you have a mismatched expectation. On one hand, somebody thinks this is going to happen. On the other side, the other guy is saying, absolutely not going to happen, although the message that goes out is different. So when two people of the same culture are talking, they understand those subtleties. But they are by no means obvious or transparent to people who don't share the same perspective, and that implies things like, for instance, the question of risk or uncertainty avoidance. Some cultures are very avoidance; they avoid risk, and therefore they would like to have a situation that is fairly non-ambiguous. And in IT, that relates to specifications that are perhaps overly detailed, or that need to be. That don't leave space for a little bit of creativity and so on, and that may seem to the person that is receiving that if he or she belongs to a culture that would rather have that little wiggle space as overly controlling. And it's fairly easy to see how that kind of thing would generate lots of misunderstandings, lots of hurt feelings, without ever having meant that way. It just is what comes naturally to either side. And so I believe strongly that something as simple as making expectations known, making them explicit, can go extremely long way. The problem, of course, is that some of our expectations are so deeply ingrained, because that's the way it has always been, that we don't question. Right? And that's part of the issue with culture. How do you even find out what part in you is just because it has always been that way, in other words, your culture, or because it would make sense or not for somebody who it's always been in a different way than yours? That, I suppose, that's really the bottom line.
So then what we are understanding is, yes, there are gaps in the way things are perceived from one party to the other based on their culture, but when we actually come down to implementing a project, which is business for both parties, they are knowing that there are cultural differences, and there must be a conscious effort that is put in from both sides to understand and kind of iron out that this is the common language we are going to talk, and we will not be interpreting in different ways. But I'm definitely sure that something must be falling through the cracks, and that's what must be causing the confusion. Would you say so?
Yes. And as a result of this falling through the cracks, let's put it this way, having the formalized procedures, everything we had discussed before, helps dramatically. It still is the same business, still is the same problem, mm-hmm. but the way people attack it is so different, and it still can be solved. I mean, that's not by no means an insurmountable problem. It's just that the chances are very large that even if things work, if some thought is given to that, things could work even better.
So tell me this, though. When people are working their own ways, but at the end of the day, if there's a deliverable, for example, a project plan or estimates or anything like that, howsoever they attack it, but if from a given team there is an expectation to provide estimates or milestones when it will be delivered, the scheduling, if the final result is the same, do we actually care? Whether how do they attack it?
Well, the issue is that even if it has happened, if everything has happened perfectly on schedule this time, it could be that that was at a very high cost, personal or otherwise, for people involved. They end up having to almost turn themselves in a pretzel to make the thing work, because that was so much against the way they believed things should happen.
Oh, I see. Okay, so you're saying the cost that goes into it, so although there's an end result, everybody may look happy, and you know the corporate world might look, well, okay, we delivered this, but at what cost? May it be at personal time level or other financials? Which might become, because financials are more tangible, they would come into picture right away, but maybe there is something else that the people spend their extra hours or something to make up for that difference of opinion or difference in the way they attack the individual problems.
Absolutely, and one critical thing is what happens the next project along.
Okay.
Because some of the attitude power the project just end will carry through to the next one. And that may be the one that will fail because of something that happened two projects earlier.
Yeah, because people can only take so much of, you know, going against the way they think.
Exactly.
Yeah. So that's awesome. Now, from the relationship standpoint, any distributed projects, either it could be part of the same company or a wholly owned subsidiary, or it could be a purely contractual relationship or even a joint venture. So given these three or four types of relationships that could possibly exist, what are the factors which are different in each of those which would, in positive way and or in negative way, would impact the way distributed projects are managed?
That's a very interesting question, because indeed we have three very different situations here. The two extreme ones, where you have a wholly owned subsidiary versus a complete contractual obligation, and the other one somewhere in between. Just to segue from the previous conversation, I think that the question of culture affects dramatically trust. So those two issues are very connected. And they relate extremely strongly to this question you just raised as well. For instance, in a wholly owned subsidiary, chances are that the organizational culture of the parent company may actually be present in the subsidiary. And that means that some of the differences in how certain procedures are done and so on is not there. But if we just think about the other differences, clearly in a contractual kind of situation, you need to the trust is in principle not the whole process. The whole reason for having a contract is that replaces that implied trust, so that you, in case something goes not as expected, you get the situation where you have a recourse to fall back on. I recall one company that was, and this was not an outsourcing situation, but I think it was a very, very relevant example, a large U.S. company that was doing business in Italy, and they were trying to price their system. The only problem is that what the Italians wanted was they basically said, okay, we'll pay X, but you only leave our company when this is installed and ready to our satisfaction. And that was a very difficult thing for the American company to accept, because to our satisfaction could imply 4 years of consulting, right? And so the Americans wanted to have a contract in place. The Italians wanted to have a handshake. And therein lies the problem. So the contractual negotiation predicts virtually every single possibility. What happens if this goes wrong? What happens if that goes wrong? And so it implies so many possibilities. It goes so much into legalese that you're almost predicting, almost like a prenuptial agreement, all the things that could go wrong in a way. And it's very important, by all means. But very different from the situation where the wholly owned subsidiary, where you bypass all those issues. There's, of course, still questions of trust, because some of the knowledge, for instance, that flows from headquarters to subsidiary could imply that somebody at headquarters lose their job. If say, an analyst is working at the headquarters and that job moves elsewhere, guess who loses the job? And guess what is his incentive or her incentive to pass that knowledge along? Very, very little. So the wholly owned subsidiary is therefore all the contractual obligations. There's a few that are still there, but by and large, we are in a different situation there. So we can continue.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, that's where when you spoke about this, you know, case in Italy where United States folks had gone in there and they tried to make this thing work. Now, I to an extent like the way United States approached it, and of course that is the way you could anyway get things done and have an arms around it. You cannot keep things vague and fully understand. Even in China, people say there are many of the times why does a business work so fast, why are they able to grow so fast, is because many times there are no contracts, it's a handshake, it's a trust thing. But when it comes down to, you know, deliverables, specific deliverables, and specifically in IT, you could stretch it to you know, a decade if you wanted to, based on when, say, you're fully satisfied. So we cannot leave it vague, and that's where, as I fully understand now, and I'm sure that listenerships would also be you know, understanding this, that culture, the way it happens, they would not like, some cultures would not like to get into specifics versus the other. So when these two cultures meet and try to do business together, they would have issues. But before we move on, let's take a quick break, listeners. We'll be right back after these messages.
Looking for ways to improve your IT department? Then visit www.avval.com today. Avval is a professional services firm with a mission to help companies align IT with their business objectives through strategy, technology, branding solutions, and services. Our commitment is to ensure bottom-line improvements as a result of services rendered by us. Whether it's an IT needs assessment, strategy development, or related implementation, we back it up by our unconditional, positive ROI guarantee. To find out how Avval can help your company, visit www.avval.com or call 1-800-947-2832. Avval, making IT work and look better. www.avval.com. Visit today.
Get ahead. Stay ahead. Strive for perfection. Listen to Seeking Business Excellence every Monday at 2 p.m. Pacific Time on Business America Radio. Hosted by Roland Vogel, Seeking Business Excellence is a show dedicated to helping you accomplish your business objectives. Each week, Roland will bring you exciting guests and in-depth analysis on today's business climate and allow you to call in and have your personal questions answered. Get ahead, stay ahead, and strive for perfection. Join Roland Vogel for Seeking Business Excellence every Monday at 2 p.m. Pacific Time here on BusinessAmericaRadio.com. Talk radio with a business perspective.
Robin Dane, Beth Sims, and Leah Ward Lee. These women mean and know business. Tune in to You, Your Money, and the Workplace with Robin Dane.
NASDAQ just keeps on trucking.
Work Life Today with Beth Sims.
Each week we explore a different topic related to creating success in our lives.
And the Executive Toolbox with Leah Ward Lee.
The Medical 101, how to keep the entrepreneur healthy.
Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays at 9 a.m. Pacific Time on Voice America.
Whether you are out to change the world or the world is changing around you, you need to tune in to Change in Context with Linda Ireland and Chris LeVictor Mahai every Monday at 3 p.m. Pacific Time. On the show, Linda and Chris will bring you topics, tools, and interesting perspectives each week to help you as your business grows into a successful corporation. Once again, that's Change in Context, heard every Monday at 3 p.m. Pacific Time, right here on BusinessAmericaRadio.com. Talk radio with a business perspective.
Tune in to Business America Radio every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time for Brands on Demand with the president and founder of Brandside, Doug Rand. On the show, Doug will provide tips and insights into maximizing brand return in an ever-demanding marketplace. The challenges facing today's brand marketers are constantly changing. Stay a step ahead of the game by listening to Brands on Demand with your host, Doug Rand, the president and founder of Brandside. Heard every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, right here on BusinessAmericaRadio.com. Talk radio with a business perspective.
You're listening to BusinessAmericaRadio.com, the leader in live business talk radio.
We now return to Managing Technology the Right Way. If you have a question or comment, call toll-free at 1-866-233-7861. Now back to the show. Here's Sun Jogal.
Welcome back to the show, folks. For listeners who've just tuned in, today's topic is managing distributed projects. Our guest for today's show is Roberto Evaristo. Roberto is on the faculty of the Information and Decision Sciences Department at the University of Illinois, Chicago. He is currently involved in several projects related to management of distributed projects with work done in Japan, USA, and Europe. Before the break, we were discussing about the three types of relationships that primarily exist whenever we are executing distributed projects, one being the contractual, second being the joint venture, and third being the wholly owned subsidiary. And Roberto was providing some examples and insight into how these different arrangements or contractual relationships or overall working relationships affect the way distributed projects are managed. So, Roberto, please continue your thoughts.
Yeah, I think that one of the interesting issues here is continuity, or the likelihood that somebody may continue, once the particular project is finished, continue to work with that partner over the long run. And in the case of a wholly owned subsidiary, that's pretty much a given, which in one hand, that gives you an incentive to work out the relationship because you know you're going to have to live with that or work with that person for a long time. And that's not necessarily true in a purely contractual situation. Of course, the other side of the coin is that in a contractual relationship, most times especially the person that has been or the company has been contracted has an incentive to do their best job in order to continue that relationship over time. But again, some projects that could be in a failing stage. It is a little easier, could be a little easier for somebody in a contractual relationship to say, okay, well, let's pay the penalty here and let's just walk out, as opposed to the company where that decision of, say, pulling the plug on a particular project could have implications for careers or everybody involved, even actual layoffs, if that's the only project they're working on. So there's many different considerations that one would have in choosing when you go about choosing some of those. But I think that's a different question, but still relevant, which leads toward the thought of almost like a maturity process for a company that's considering buying into the idea of outsourcing, all the way from a particular situation ranging to, say, all the way to a wholly owned subsidiary. There is not a particular solution that is right for everybody. It all depends on what the needs and what the situation is. And there's clearly pros and cons on each one of those three alternatives.
And in fact, I was trying to compare the contractual relationship more like a marriage and the severance of that as divorce. And the reason I'm saying that is because, you know, when you get married, you're coming in with all the best expectations from either party. And if the things go south, they don't at least are looking that as if they are working out. Then the first very instance is a good sign for the customer to say, okay, let's cut our losses and move on. But from the other hand, and we look at this, the contractual relationship and the contractors, people who are doing the job as vendors, they might have already put their best effort because they are looking for continuity. But at the same time, if things did not go well, it cannot be totally attributed to how the contractor did or the vendor did. It also should have some bearing on the way the customer behaved, or in the sense the way they dealt with the project, the way they had set expectations. So again, coming back to the marriage and divorce thing, it has to be worked out. It is not something that you can just try somebody out. If it doesn't work out in the first instance, just walk out, because this is something which you are actually losing when you just walk out just right like that. There is some knowledge that has been garnered over time, some business knowledge that this contractor or the vendor has garnered over time. At least these guys should be given some chances before you would just say, okay, you screwed up, so let's move on and let's find another vendor. There's a loss for the customer there too. What are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, that's a very interesting point. Again, some of these people will have that difficulty in finding the right partner, very much like your analogy about a marriage. But assuming you start with a due diligence on choosing a right partner, either on a purely contractual connection relationship, or even with the potential idea of going into JV, one would be hopeful that would have been a good start, and you create, of course, exit clauses in that relationship, very much like in other situations. So there are some things that can be done. I mean, there is extensive work done on how to approach both of the contractual relationships as well as joint ventures. And I think that's, I would highly recommend the people that are serious about either one of those, that would consider the problems and be us, basically look at the problem right in the face and decide where the pain points, where the pressure points, and then make a decision based on that and their reality.
And see, and as compared to the contractual, when we go to this wholly owned subsidiary issue where we have this cozy corporate umbrella sitting on top of us, or like suppose we were the ones who are delivering sitting in a remote or in a different location, and we know that, yes, if there is a problem, if there is a project that goes south, we know that it is not going to be just like a straightforward severance. We will be given a chance, and there would be some lessons learned kind of meetings, and people will say, okay, how can we do better, and then we can move on. But at the same time, given that cozy comfort zone that people work in, and I'm not trying to generalize it, but you know, that's a natural tendency for anybody to have the security thing. If the security is there, people normally tend to just relax just a little bit, maybe not completely, but just a little bit. So maybe that could also have an adverse effect in a way to the way people are performing to give their best to their project. So how do you take this approach?
A very, very interesting point. I'm currently involved with a large U.S. company that does exactly that. They have IS development in three different countries, in fact, abroad. And it turns out that, of course, they are the cozy corporate umbrella. All these three sites are fully funded at this point. The interesting thing, though, is there is clearly a pattern tower deciding which one will at least grow versus stagnate, or perhaps even which ones will be closed in the long run. So it's cozy in the very, very short run, but it's not truly cozy in the long run. So the risk of the whole center to be closed is still very much there. And in talking to folks at more than one of the centers, one of their concerns, one of their key concerns is always, how am I performing as compared to center B or C? That's foremost question, and because I'm involved in more than one of them, of course, that's something that is very touchy for me to even, and I am not able to share that with them, but that's clearly a main concern. So there is no doubt in the short run, a failure may not have the same severance implications, but mid to long run, the issue is there as well.
That's great. Now, quickly, I actually understand that you have a research project going where you're trying to help these companies, the companies which are trying to have these distributed projects managed, to adopt or actually help create, in the first place, participate in creating a maturity model for managing these projects. Then our listeners would definitely be interested about learning more about this. So what is it supposed to do? How is it supposed to help? Please provide your thoughts.
Yeah, thanks for asking that. What happens is that, of course, there is many types of maturity models out there, capability maturity model being perhaps the most well-known, about how a company goes through certain levels of procedures and preparation, developing software, for instance, but that has been applied to many different areas. What we have in mind is something slightly different, but that we believe that is very sorely lacking. And really, our main focus is the two pieces of this three alternative continuum that you mentioned. So most of my work has been related to the wholly owned subsidiary, but the JV is also something that is interesting. And one of the issues here is because there's a large number of companies doing that, but at the same time, every time that I talk to a company and they are in a different point of their experience, say number of years they started that process, either JV or a wholly owned subsidiary, some people also call that offshore insourcing, what happens is that they find certain problems. And they go through the whole process of trying to decide how to address those problems. And the issue is that somebody elsewhere has already been there because they just have been on the path for a longer time. In other words, what we're missing is some sort of understanding of best practices. There is many people out there that have done an extraordinarily good job, and they are way ahead than others, just because they start earlier, and also perhaps because they just put a lot more resources into that. And some sharing on those best practices would be extremely valuable for companies that are starting, or even trying to understand what would happen if they move into that kind of alternative, which they may at this point just considering. So what the project that I'm proposing, me and a few associates are proposing and actually have gotten basically started on, is that we want to see how companies, how this relationship between headquarters and subsidiary, either a wholly owned subsidiary or in a joint venture, matures over time. And so I would like to describe that in a little bit more detail after we have this, your comments there.
So that's amazing the way you are trying to bring, you know, help companies, you know, get their arms around this problem of how to manage these distributed projects. Before we delve more into detail in this, let's take a quick break, listeners. We'll be right back after these messages.
Looking for ways to improve your IT department? Then visit www.avval.com today. Avval is a professional services firm with a mission to help companies align IT with their business objectives through strategy, technology, branding solutions, and services. Our commitment is to ensure bottom-line improvements as a result of services rendered by us. Whether it's an IT needs assessment, strategy development, or related implementation, we back it up by our unconditional, positive ROI guarantee. To find out how Avval can help your company, visit www.avval.com or call 1-800-947-2832. Avval, making IT work and look better. www.avval.com. Visit today.
Come see what all the talk is about.
What about the best road experience you guys have had so far?
When we're having a really good experience on the road, I usually don't remember most of it.
Jay, our party topic is, don't own it, don't worry.
How was the premiere at Freddy vs. Jason?
Wonderful, absolutely.
www.voiceamerica.com. It's what you've been missing.
Smith Ford & Associates asked businesses with 1 to 100 employees what their challenges are. Then they designed a radio program to help solve those problems. Business America Radio proudly presents the Business Law Hour with your host, Diane Smith, broadcast live every Wednesday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time. On the show, Diane will have experienced attorneys call give advice to small to mid-sized businesses on how to protect their assets. So make a note to log on and listen to the Business Law Hour every Wednesday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, right here on BusinessAmericaRadio.com. Talk radio with a business perspective.
Are you interested in the immigration laws that are increasingly affecting the way we all live? Then you need to tune in to Learner on Immigration every Thursday at 12 p.m. Pacific Time on Business America Radio. Host Brian Lerner, a certified specialist in immigration and nationality law, will give you updates on current immigration laws and allow you to call in and have your questions answered. The immigration policies of this country affect us all. Find out how on Learner on Immigration with certified specialist Brian Lerner. Heard every Thursday at 12 p.m. Pacific Time right here on BusinessAmericaRadio.com. Talk radio with a business perspective.
Talk radio with a business perspective. This is BusinessAmericaRadio.com.
Robin Dean, Beth Sims, and Leah Ward Lee. These women mean and know business. Tune in to You, Your Money, and the Workplace with Robin Dean.
NASDAQ just keeps on trucking.
Work Life Today with Beth Sims.
Each week we explore a different topic related to creating success in our lives.
And the Executive Toolbox with Leah Ward Lee.
The Medical 101, how to keep the entrepreneur healthy.
Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays at 9 a.m. Pacific Time on Voice America.
Keeping you a step ahead of the changing world of business. This is BusinessAmericaRadio.com.
We now return to Managing Technology the Right Way. If you have a question or comment, call toll-free at 1-866-233-7861. Now back to the show. Here's Sun Jogal.
Welcome back to the show, folks. For listeners who have just tuned in, today's topic is managing distributed projects. Our guest for today's show is Roberto Evaristo. Roberto is on the faculty of the Information and Decision Sciences Department at the University of Illinois, Chicago. He is currently involved in several projects related to the management of distributed projects with work done in Japan, USA, and Europe. Before the break, we were discussing about this unique research project that has been that is being led by Roberto in the area of providing a maturity model to the companies who are interested and working on distributed projects and offshore outsourced distributed projects. So, Roberto, please continue your thoughts.
Thanks again. As I was mentioning, one of the critical problems is that many companies, they're contemplating perhaps starting either a JV or a wholly owned subsidiary. They don't know exactly what the problems are in details, or many of them have already started. Many times I see a lot of resources being wasted in trying to decide things that others have already been through exactly the same problems. It's amazing how similar some of the problems are over time. So it's almost like, oops, that's my time to get into problem X, because that's as a function of the maturation of that relationship between headquarters and subsidiary, or between headquarters and JV, in the development of procedures, development of different types of software testing versus, say, new software development versus patching versus whatever. As a result, since we believe that there is so much that is lacking there, so much of that relationship of best practices and so on, our proposal is to basically invite companies to join us to participate in trying to understand where they are in this maturity process and how they can learn from other people that may be either ahead or perhaps behind, because since there's so many different dimensions, they could be ahead in some but behind in other dimensions. So it's a wonderful opportunity for companies to decide to join us to learn not only about the others but about themselves, of course in a very confidential way, so nobody's identified, but the true beauty of this is that it allows people to benchmark and understand where they are and really have a good glimpse of what is ahead in the future. Really learn how to solve issues that seem to be very difficult, but other people have already at least identified alternatives and many times made a choice that for them worked best.
That's great. Now, this is very intriguing, but what exactly challenges do you foresee in its adoption? Because, you know, as most companies already are trying to do something similar, but what's so different about this that they would not have seen, and what would be the set of challenges, as I asked already, in its adoption?
Well, one of the critical issues, of course, for a company in participating in this is that they would have to be willing to invest some time, because that implies me and potentially some of the other researchers talking to them. But clearly, once that is given and they have the opportunity to understand, to get a shared result, deliverables, how they fit within everybody else, then their challenge at that point may be, is this the direction we want to go? But at least they would be able to make an informed decision of where to go and how to go there, or even if they want to do that. So ultimately, the adoption in itself, there is really two adoptions here. One is, do I adopt the idea of participating in the project? And second, once I have the results, do I choose to go this route or not? But I think that we have a very powerful deliverable that is an actionable piece of information for the manager to come to terms to the second decision, which is, should I go ahead with this? What is the best way to go ahead with this? How has it worked for other people? Is it likely that I'm going to get a good cost-benefit positive situation here? So that's, I think we can be very helpful, and it can be very helpful for companies decide to join us.
That's wonderful. Now, for any IT-related professional services firm, normally how they differentiate themselves is basically by the unique process. I don't know how unique actually it is, but, you know, there's a different schematics for the same set of processes that you could ever have for an IT project execution, but still there is something unique that they try to build so that they can go and show that to folks who are the customers, who are potential customers, and say, hey, this is how we are different. When they are already trying to do this, and on the other hand, we are trying to, through this maturity model, try to bring them under a common framework, so they would be threatened in a way that their competitive advantage or perceived competitive advantage would be lost, because we'll just say, okay, we are following this XYZ maturity model, versus saying this is how we are different. So they would be not just another professional services firm if you were to not follow your maturity model. They could stand and, you know, make them stand out. But if they use your maturity model, we'll say, yes, this is a seal of compliance or seal of maturity, but where does my USP, the unique selling proposition, go? So how do you think this challenge will be addressed using your maturity model?
Well, if we think of more established maturity models out there, say CMMI and things like that, or just CMM, the fact that companies are level 2 or level 3, it is a selling point, very much like you say, it's a certification kind of thing, but in itself does not guarantee their commercial success. That is the fact. There is many other things that go into that. So our position here is, this is a tool to help, and would help not only a traditional company but potentially the professional service as well. But I don't see that as a competition. I see that as a tool that is equally advantageous for everybody. So it does, because it's available, would be available to all, of course, in more detail, so people who participate, because then they can directly compare themselves. But I don't see that as a threat to anybody, because in fact, if everybody has access to the same thing, then it is the competitive advantages that used to exist before, they still do. This just improves the playing field for everybody.
Oh, that's wonderful. On behalf of the show and our listeners, I would like to thank you, Roberto, for sharing your experience and insights about managing distributed IT projects.
And I just would like to mention that a description of this research project is available on the website with my email as well. So I do encourage and would like to invite people that would like to participate to please contact me. And thank you very much for inviting, and it was a pleasure to be in your show.
Thanks again. I urge all our listeners to participate, as this is going to be the success of this show. While distributed IT projects may be able to leverage skill management and lower development costs, there are related chronic issues that offset these benefits. And to address these issues, Corporations have spent a lot of time and money to come with a robust execution frameworks that ensures high quality and timely delivery. But we can do better. I urge the corporations to take a closer look at the proposed maturity model development for managing distributed IT projects and support it. You can review a two-page summary of this research project on our website, talkshow.awol.com, which also includes Roberto's contact information. Please direct any questions about this project to Roberto directly or send us an email at talkshow.questions@awol.com. Thank you again for listening to Managing Technology the Right Way. This is Sanjog Aul, your talk show host. Till next Friday, take care and God bless.
Thank you for listening to Managing Technology the Right Way. Please join Sanjog Aul next Friday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time right here on BusinessAmericaRadio.com.